Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rod.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanik.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right. Welcome back. Hope you're having a nice little Thursday. It's your sports bros, Rop and Sook. I'm Rop. Big Sook's right over there.
We're right here.
With
our first show of the new year.
Yep. Ryan Buckley is back from his trip to the Rose Bowl where he got wildly drunk and almost kicked out.
What an exciting time.
Actually, he almost didn't make it. He booked a PM flight instead of an AM flight.
That's right.
But Alaska took good care of him.
That's right, they did.
Whenever I'm booking a flight, I'm always panicked. I will recheck the date, the time of my flight like 17 times before clicking purchase. And I don't know why I've never messed one up, but that is always like a weird irrational fear of mine.
I've heard of people going to the wrong airport. That's apparently a thing, probably not here, but in like places like the Bay Area or LA, you can go to the wrong airport pretty easily. But yeah, this was pretty wild, especially because of the fact when I was looking for the gate, I kept looking at my ticket. I was looking at flight number. I was looking at gate. I was looking at airline. Never once did I consider the AM PM factor.
Wow. Well, at least you caught it.
Yeah. The gate agent caught it. I'm like, where is my gate? I'm supposed to be taking off in 40 minutes. She's like, that's in 12 hours and 40 minutes.
Gosh.
Sorry about that. Hey, but it worked out.
It worked out.
Well, have you guys been to the... Well, you obviously have. Sook, have you been... You went... Well, did you fly? Did you drive to Canada or did you fly?
I drove.
Have you been to the new PDX yet?
I have many times.
Yeah. What a great...
Pretty nice.
Yes.
Great job they did on that.
Yeah, and they're still working on some... Yeah. It'll be better when all the construction's done because now they're working on...
Yeah, they got another part of it that hasn't been revealed yet, but my God, that is so much better.
Yes, 100%.
So much better.
It's very, very nice.
And what's fun about it... Well, actually, it's not fun. It's kind of stupid, but I can dig it. Did you see how they have the stadium seating for people waiting for when you come out of the gate?
Yes.
It's almost like you walk into an arena of people. They're sitting there waiting for you.
It's going to be one of those like Diamond Company commercials where like someone's going to propose and then all the family's going to be sitting behind newspapers in the gallery. Right. You know,
it's one thing where I don't like this. I thought the only positive thing that came from all the new security is we no longer have to go in for the drop off or the pickup. And I don't like that we're trying to bring back the, if I'm picking you up, no.
Make airport pickups great again?
Yeah, I'm not into that. That's the one good thing we can say came out of the whole early 2000 thing is that, remember back in the day, if you were picking someone up or dropping them off, a lot of times you had to park, walk with them to the gate, or be there when they got off the plane. We do not need to go backwards on that. The curbside pickup drop off is the place to be.
Why was that a thing?
I don't know.
Did we just do that because... It was just easier?
I think it wasn't easier. I think it was considered rude to just take someone to the airport and then be like, get the hell out of the car.
I think at the time it was easier because you didn't have to go through security or anything. You could just go right to the gate.
That's true.
So you could just park and go to the gate. Now you can't even get to the gate.
No.
They make you sit and wait until you come out of the gate.
And so now you want me, even though I can't get to the gate, you want me to sit in the stadium seating and welcome people home? I say nay.
Well, I think that the only time, and I don't know if this is true for everyone, the only time it's acceptable to get to park and get out of the car when someone is coming to visit is when it's a big deal. Like, you know, like...
No, I'm saying one thing and one thing only. Returning from war.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, a big deal. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot of things that are big deals.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have the kids with the sign and, oh my God, there's going to be tears and hugs.
Yeah.
Like, that
Well, like, Sook's daughter's in Korea now, and so, like, you know, maybe she doesn't come back to the U.S. for a long time, and maybe you guys are like, hey, when she does, we'll have a big old welcoming party for her.
It had been 2 years since I had seen my daughter, and I did pick her up at the Vancouver airport. We drove to Canada, and then she flew, and I picked her up on Christmas morning. Guess who wasn't waiting there? No, we'll see you at the curb. Unless you are a war hero coming home, I am not entering that airport. I will see you at the curb.
I think that there are some other instances where it's okay. Well, like I said, it's a big deal. Maybe it's a long lost relative, or maybe maybe a kid coming home from college, or I'm trying to think of other
coming home from college. That's not pickup worthy.
Special occasions, you know. No. I don't know. You know what? When they, it's one of those things you can't really identify, but you know when you see it.
I don't like it.
And I think that's okay. But when we were getting off our flight, we went to San Diego and came back. There were a ton of people sitting in those seats waiting for people to come off the
planes.
Yeah, and
that's what I'm saying. I don't like that we're now trying to normalize that again. Not in my world.
I waved to them all.
Hey, what's going on?
They waved back.
Yeah.
They were like, welcome home.
Signs and balloons. Hey.
Well, anyway, the new airport is really nice.
Yes, it is.
They did a great job and are still doing a great job on that. Coming up in the club tonight, a significant scientific discovery in England. I don't know if you saw this, but it's big. Bigly.
I don't know if I have seen this or not.
Well, I think you would know if you had.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes you say that, and then I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then when you say it, I'm like, oh, yeah. I just may not consider that to be huge.
Big deal.
Big deal. Pretty good.
Big. So that'll be in the club. We have a short club tonight because the Ducks are playing Illinois. Big game.
Yeah.
Out there at Matthew Knight. At any rate. This hour, we'll get back into Oregon's loss, what's next for the Ducks, and our college football clover leaf. Anyone?
Luck of the Irish.
Right now, the Hot 5 at 5.
Oh! Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 with Isaac and Sue. Brought to you on The Fan by Victorico's Mexican Food. Discover Victorico's new savory menu items. Order in-store, online, or get it delivered straight to your door at victorico's.com.
I'm sorry. I want to run.
Number five.
Well, a real sport has finally begun. Enough of this football crap.
Talking about the big hockey game going on right now?
Golf season is underway. PGA Tour is back. They are at the Century on Maui, the plantation course, where it's usually a birdie fest. I think somebody won it last year at like 76 under or something.
That does seem like a lot.
So it was like 30 something, but still, they throw a lot of birdies up there. Tom Hoagie.
Hot Tom Hoagie talk.
Your leader after round one.
You needed that.
Well, actually, they're still playing, but he's 9 under. Will Zalatoris, your boy, is back. 8 under.
I thought Zalatoris was Liv.
Oh, God, no. No.
Who am I thinking of?
I don't know. Cameron Young, 7 under.
I might be thinking of Cam Smith.
Colin Morikawa, 7 under.
Yes, Cam Smith is slight, blonde, and Liv.
Yeah.
He went to Liv after winning the British.
Yeah.
Zally, he hasn't even won a major. Little bitch.
Loser.
But get excited. Golf's back.
By the way, I just went to ESPN. And, you know, they have to have it under more sports. I can't even find golf on more sports.
ESPN doesn't know what it's doing. You got to go to the PGA Tour app.
It's sandwiched somewhere between Little League World Series, F1, and NLL.
National Lacrosse League? Nice.
Yeah.
Duck hoops tonight on The Fan, 6:30. Big one. Number 9, Oregon hosting number 22, Illinois.
That's tasty little game.
Or is it Illinois?
The Fighting Illini?
I think it's the Illini.
Oh, that's what that is. Are they still allowed to use the Fighting Illini?
Chief Illiniwek and all that?
Or is it just a Illini now?
Yeah, I don't know if they're fighting.
We had that thing for a while where the fighting thing got to be problematic.
The Illini already have ranked wins over Arkansas and Wisconsin. The Ducks, top 25 nationally in three-point defense. The game, right here on The Fan, baby.
Oregon favored by 4.5. In case you were wondering.
Yeah, it could be a good game.
number three.
Who's Oregon's one loss to?
Interesting matchup.
UCLA on a banked in three at the buzzer.
Pistons, middle of the pack in the East. They lose Jaden Ivey for the season now. He has a broken fib.
He had had a resurgent year, though. He was having a big year for them, and middle of the pack, that's good for Detroit. And he got
hurt. That's why I said that, because I think a lot of people might think that they're still at the bottom of the East. They're not.
No, they were like, this was a real bummer. I was like Detroit fans finally had, after years and years of just being the worst team, had felt like maybe they had something going, and then I don't know if it was a dirty play, but Cole Anthony dove for a loose ball, a little reckless, and rolled up into him and broke his leg.
Look at you watching the NBA, watching hot Pistons basketball. Good grief. The Blazers visiting the Lakers tonight. Jeremy Grant remains out. Meanwhile, Chauncey Billups now the odds-on favorite as next coach turfed.
Does it really matter? Does it really matter? They are so far off. Number two. But I love that they'll win a game or two.
And but yet the Pistons are on your radar?
Well, no, I just was watching that because obviously the injury. But the Blazers will win like one or two games and Scoot has like a decent game and people are like, oh my God, the corner's turned. Like, give it a game and you'll be right back to not caring.
Hey, quick hot stove update. We've got two favorites who have emerged for third baseman Alex Bregman in free agency. The Toronto Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. And the Detroit Tigers.
Boy, the Tigers is a bit of an interesting one. But Toronto always seems to want to throw their hat into this. But the LT Grays, huh?
Yeah, the Tigers. Also, I don't know if you saw, but Pete Alonso. You see the surprise team in the Pete Alonso sweepstakes?
Well, and they're saying that Pete may not sign for a while because they're asking for a lot of money and the first base market is dried up. So who has emerged here?
Your Los Angeles Angels.
Really?
Yeah. Which would be weird.
Well, I mean, we've seen this happen with Boris clients where Pete Alonso's good, he's not great, and Boris gets in there and he wants big money, and I'm not certain it's coming anywhere. I'm kind of hoping the Mets can get him on a reasonable contract because there's no other option.
What's reasonable for a guy like that?
Number one.
Well, it certainly isn't what they're asking for, but, you know, you get him somewhere in the mid-20s. I think you take that if you're the Mets.
We had the final college football playoff quarterfinal go down today, the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans, and Notre Dame played stout defense. They scored 17 points in a 54-second span, and they beat Georgia 23-10. The Irish are the early 1.5-point favorites in their semifinal matchup with Penn State.
So we can officially, all conference champions are gone. All four of the teams with byes, obviously, are gone. And so now we can make sweeping conclusions, you know, that the playoff is broken. And
back to the four-team format.
Radical
go back.
Changes. I'd also like to point out that in this format here, the two favorites, Notre Dame and Ohio State, wouldn't even be in the old format. So, you can bitch all you want. This has been a tremendous success.
Well, I don't know who's... Well, I do know who's bitching.
A lot of people are bitching.
But, I mean, it's like, you know, they'll fix it. Yeah. This was great. It was great for the regular season, and it's great now.
Yeah.
So now we have three more college football games left. Well, that's not true. There's a couple bowl games. As a matter of fact, Ole Miss and Duke are playing right now.
The Tax Slayer Gator Bowl going on right now is 0-0, just underway.
Yeah. And then here's the other weird thing, is that Notre Dame, Penn State, and Ohio State, Texas, mm-hmm, are both during the week next week.
I know, it's so odd.
They are not on a Saturday.
No, it's on the 10th, right?
Well, no.
The 9th and 10th.
Yeah, so Notre Dame, Penn State will be Thursday, mm-hmm, 1 week from today.
That's the Capital One Orange Bowl.
And then Friday, Ohio State plays Texas, and both of those games will be going on during our stupid show.
That's what, 4:30 kicks on both of those?
Which is absurd.
That is so strange. And then the 20th, they're still doing it on the Monday, right?
Yeah, Monday, January 20th.
Yeah.
That's the final.
And that is, where is the championship this year?
I thought it.
Atlanta.
Dallas.
Championships.
Oh, no, Atlanta.
Semifinals
right.
Yeah. Dallas and Miami.
Well, look, it's a little funky that we've got the 5, 8, 6, and 7 seed, but Notre Dame, Penn State, Texas, Ohio State, I don't think.
Good Final Four?
It's a good Final Four.
Good little Final Four.
Yeah.
And they're both good matchups.
Yes.
I think if it were the other way around, maybe. I don't know. Like if it were Ohio State, Penn State. And
I'm pulling. I wouldn't mind seeing Penn State, Ohio State again. I need Ohio State and Notre Dame. Give me that. Give me Ohio State, give me Notre Dame, and let's do this.
Okay. Well, we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. Let's recap yesterday's bloodbath in L.A.
Yeah.
Coming up next.
didn't go well.
The Hot 5 at 5 brought to you by Victor Rico's Mexican Food, a hit with the whole family. Order in-store, online, or delivered to your door at victorricos.com. When you think of flavor, think of Victor Rico's. We'll be right back on 1080 The Fam. Well, our love is lifting you higher today. At least that's what we want. So keep
it up. I think Duck fans definitely need a lift.
A hug?
Yeah, a hug. You know,
a sports hug?
Maybe some hand stuff. You know, they need something. It's not
some
good.
Hand stuff.
It's not good right now.
God, man. What? Yeah, that was
rough. That wouldn't put you in a better mood? Sorry. It's all I'm offering.
I mean, temporarily. I just, it was rough. It was over. Like, the first play.
Yeah.
The first damn play, you're like, oh, boy.
When there's, like, one player catching the ball with no one within 20 yards of him?
Yes. You're like, oh, no. Yeah.
Well, maybe they just found a hole on that one play, and the rest won't be like this. No, no, the rest were pretty much like that.
You knew Ohio State was going to come out and get aggressive. They weren't going to run a conservative game plan. And, you know, they come out in those the first drive, the three plays. Two of them were really nice scheme drops, right, where you got G. Scott on the tight end and then Smith on the little fake jet action sweep and, you know, got him in open space and thanks for coming. That dude's just a freak. So the idea was, and even Oregon probably said, okay, they got us with some scripted plays. We knew they were going to have some wrinkles. We got some wrinkles too. No worry. We're going to settle down and we'll be in this thing. Well, you never settle down. You just didn't. And so not only was it a schematic thing that they beat you by being aggressive offensively, their defensive schemes had Dylan Gabriel confused. And then up front, you just were dominated on both sides of the ball. I mean, it was just a thorough ass kicking. There's really nothing you can point to that Oregon did well in that game.
Yeah, that's what I think sucks about it is that you thought maybe those teams were pretty even.
Yeah.
And you knew you'd get their best shot. Mm-hmm. You know, they clearly had some momentum and they had the revenge factor, but... So you knew they'd be good. Like, yeah. It's like, all right, let's lace them up. Let's go. I mean, we beat you once. This is a good team, but we're the only ones that went undefeated,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So you thought, okay, well, we know they're going to bring it. Let's see what happens.
But we'll at least be up for this.
Yes.
Yeah.
The way they handled it was like olden days Ducks, yeah. Like where they were just thoroughly outmanned and outclassed. Yeah. And that was surprising. That was the most surprising.
Well, we've talked a lot, and Suk mentioned this when he went to the first Ohio State game, that like you guys have been to games in the past and you looked at both rosters on the field level and like Oregon doesn't have the size and the guys, and we thought that had changed. And when they went out and played yesterday, it didn't look like it had changed. It looked like they were out physicaled out everything.
Is it has changed. I'm telling you.
But why does it look like
that? No, I know it has changed, but it just didn't look like it
that
yesterday.
That game, you ran into a buzzsaw. But again, you proved it. You've seen it. You've played toe-to-toe with Ohio State twice over the last handful of years. So if those two teams played 10 times, the result is not 41-21.
I agree with that, but I just think that's the most alarming part of this.
Yeah.
Is that it's not that they lost, it's that they were completely whipped.
But I guess
on both lines.
I guess all I'm saying is, to a man, those rosters aren't that much. There's not much separating that. Like when you look through Oregon's D line, Ohio State's D line, when you look at their O line, our O line, the running backs was a huge. That's where I'll say there's a discrepancy. But Oregon has a better quarterback. At least we thought not in that particular game.
Will Howard played great.
Will Howard did play great.
He played really well both times he played him, except for that slide play.
But we're gonna try to come up with this narrative that Ohio State is just physically so much better than Oregon, and it's just not true.
In
this game, it was true.
I don't think anyone's saying that. I think all we're saying is it's just. I agree with what you're saying. I think most people know where Oregon is at.
Yeah.
Obviously, they beat Ohio State once. They're not,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
But I think it's just the idea that if you're that close to them and things have changed, how does it look like that?
Yeah.
How do you get so dominated on both lines of scrimmage like that? I mean, it was alarming. No one's drawing any grand conclusions from that, or at least you shouldn't be. It's just that was really shocking.
Yeah, it is
I don't think many people thought a Dan Lanning team that went undefeated this season, already beat this team once, had 24 days to get ready, would look like that and
would
get dominated.
Fall behind by 34.
Got smoked.
I'm not shocked that Ohio State obviously had a good offensive output. I'm shocked that there was no resistance from the Oregon defense, but we saw it in the first game. I'm just shocked that the Oregon offense, which all year had looked as good as anyone and was the number one offense in the country, I'm surprised that an offense that good looked completely inept. And not just inept, but Galloway kind of pointed this out. Gabriel looked lost. And I'll give credit to Ohio State. Dude, someone forgot to tell the Ohio State defensive line that this is a really good Oregon D-line, because without bringing a ton of pressure, they whooped their ass up front. I thought Ohio State did a great job of disguising coverages. I don't think Oregon did anything at all to make Ohio State bring a safety down into the box. In fact, I thought Ohio State played a lot of the game in basically a 4-2 look where they were running three safeties out there, and that freed up Downs to basically be a rover and do whatever he wanted, but still play a two-high look. Oregon never got behind the Ohio State secondary. Ohio State learned their lesson from that first Ohio game, or first Oregon game, and we knew that they would throw adjustments and made huge adjustments on their whole defensive scheme after that game. I just thought Oregon would have a counterpunch, and they had nothing. They completely laid an egg, and I brought it up. When you go back and watch that game, look, they were losing that game no matter what. But when you go back and watch that, there were four or five plays, especially in that first half, that were 50-50 balls. We had the one where Gabriel threw it, and he had Tez Johnson on a touchdown. It hit the Ohio State guy in the helmet. If that's just 2 yards out in front, that's a touchdown. There were two plays on third downs where the Ohio State guy, the DB, reaches out and makes a great play tipping the ball away. Again, if that ball comes out half a click sooner, those are different. Like, all those 50-50 plays that you had all went Ohio State's way, and then the thing starts snowballing, and before you know it, you're playing from behind. You can't run the ball. Now Ohio State can pin their ears back, and the dam bursts. Ohio State clearly better than Oregon in spades. But what I don't want people to take is that somehow that Oregon team is a farce. That's the best team in college football when fully healthy, Ohio State. We've seen it. We heard all year long that people were saying, hey, if Ohio State ever puts it together, this is the team. Well, you just saw it the last 2 weeks. And you're not that good. And when Ohio State plays like that, you're not beating them. But I think you have to be careful with this narrative that Oregon was somehow a paper tiger, or that they... I still think Oregon would have beat or could have beat anyone in this tournament, not name Ohio State. And I think if Ohio State and Oregon play 10 times, maybe that's the result once or twice, but that is not indicative of where those two programs are at. But on that particular day, that scheme, you picked a really bad day to show up and not play very well when you were playing a fully operational Death Star in Ohio State. And they had a player in Jeremiah Smith who just... There was a play where he was in triple coverage and it didn't matter. He still went up and high pointed the ball. Bottom line is your DBs were 5'9", and that guy is 6'3", and the best receiver in college football at 19 years old.
Just got a bad draw.
Yeah, bad draw.
Got a bad draw, man. That team is cooking right now. They're the first team, Ohio State, to beat three top 10 teams by 20 or more in the same season since Nebraska in 1995. Yeah. Did you know that about Ohio State?
I did not, but that... is pretty damn good.
So that's Tennessee, Indiana, and Oregon. Mm.
And I don't know if Indiana should be included in that, but Tennessee and Oregon were both damn good teams.
Well,
and
they were top 10 teams.
They were
the
top
time.
10 teams.
So, I mean...
Ohio State made Tennessee and Oregon look like the little sister Mary of the poor Tallahassee JUCO Raiders, and it was ugly. And...
Pac-12 teams, former Pac-12, you know what their bowl record is?
What?
1-5.
Hmm. And see, again, that stinks because it goes back to the draw. And please don't make excuses about the draw. God, you sound pathetic when people start crying about that.
So Oregon lost, Arizona State lost. Although that's a little misleading because it was just, I mean, they had byes.
They had byes.
Washington lost, Washington State lost, Colorado got smoked.
Yeah.
The only team that won was USC. And I'm not really even sure how they did that.
Yeah.
But they won.
If
beat Texas A&M.
If you would have put, and it's hindsight being 2020, because now we've seen Oregon play and we've seen the rest of the teams play. Is there a team that if you had to line up next week, even after watching that Ohio State game, that you would say worries you for Oregon? No. Other? Yeah.
I think Notre Dame. I feel like Oregon and Notre Dame would be a dogfight.
Agreed.
I feel like Texas would be tough, but I just think, again, as we've talked about a million times, I just don't trust Sark or yours. I think Oregon could beat Texas, although that team's really talented. Penn State, you've already seen it once.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's like an Ohio State situation where if you played them again, you'd see something completely different. So, yeah, I think maybe, I was talking back and forth with a friend about this during the game. That was the final.
Yeah.
It was just a weird bracket. It's the first year they've done the 12-teamer, and it got screwy, and they got a bad draw. Yep. It's just
you had to go through them eventually, and
exactly. You know. And I think the way that they lost might make you think that they weren't going to win that tournament anyway. So that might make you feel a little better.
Well, I will say you called this going into that game. You know, we all had the question of if there was one Achilles heel for this Oregon team, and you wanted to nitpick the number one team in the country, it would be that three times they had played real offenses, and all three of those offenses, and by the way, they were all in the playoff, Ohio State, Boise State, Penn State, they all scored 30 points and kind of had their way with you. And so there was this idea of, God, is this defense really a good defense, or is it more of it's a solid defense that, you know, hasn't really been tested a ton other than those three teams? And unfortunately, I think what we saw was that defense was indeed probably not good enough to win a national championship.
I don't think it's a championship level defense, but I do think they were a championship level team.
Yes.
It was just a bad matchup That's the one team, Ohio State, yeah, that defensively could do that to your offense. I don't think there's another defense in this tournament that could do what Ohio State did to Oregon's offense, because Oregon's defense is not, as we've seen, they're going to give up 30 against elite teams, okay? Yeah. So if you play Texas, Texas is probably going to score 30. The question is what does your offense do against Texas's defense?
Yeah.
I'm not sure Texas's defense, particularly the way they shoot themselves in the foot and they have a bunch of penalties, I'm not sure that they beat Oregon in that way. Ohio State was the one team, yeah, especially after having seen them, seen Oregon's offense already once and gotten burned by it. They were the one team that had the talent and the staff. You know, Jim Knowles is really well respected. Yeah. That had the combination of the offense to beat your defense, which I think a lot of teams in this tournament could, but they also had the defense, yeah, that could really slow down your offense. I mean, they sacked Dylan Gabriel eight times. Dude,
and compared to zero in
zero,
the first game.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'll
no, give, what other team could do that?
Yeah. I mean Notre
Dame. Maybe Notre Dame.
Notre Dame, but Notre Dame doesn't have an offense that would have tested.
But Riley Mills is out.
Yeah.
And I know that they did that to Georgia today, but dude, Georgia's on a backup. Their offense sucked.
Yes.
So I don't know. I think there's one team that could do to Oregon what happened to Oregon, and it was the one team that they happened to run into in the quarterfinals.
Exactly. Whether you play them now or you played them down the road, you felt like that was, if you were going to run into that version, and if that's the version that everyone else sees, Ohio State's winning this whole thing, and they're probably winning it going away. And, you know, you got shillelied a little bit. Unfortunately, you beat them the one game that it didn't really matter, and you lost to them in the one that did. But it's the fashion that it went down, and I give credit. I just thought from a schematics point, Ohio State really did a nice job.
Chuck Kelly.
Not letting the things that fooled you in the first game and burn you, not letting it beat you again. And maybe the best thing that happened to them was losing to Oregon and losing to Michigan, because I think when they lost to Oregon, they went back to the drawing board and were like, we cannot rely on talent alone on defense, and they made adjustments. And after the Michigan game, they said, we cannot be stagnant and rely on just, you know, our run game and playing defense, and they opened it up with Will Howard, and look at what happened the last two games. So Ohio State learned from their mistakes, and now you're getting the best version of them, and the best version of them is the best team in the country, and Oregon just picked a bad day to play a poor game. Like, I haven't seen their O-line get drilled like that all year since the Boise State and Idaho games when you played poorly. And, I mean, All-American tackles getting beat one-on-one, and I'm just not used to seeing that all year. I mean, they could not run the ball. I think you take the quarterback stuff out of it, I think they ran the ball for like 24 yards. I mean, you're just not beating anyone like that. And then you throw in the fact that no Evan Stewart, who killed him in the first game, Tez Johnson was beat up, and Jordan James went out. I mean, that thing was over, honestly, before it started. I mean, it was 8 minutes into the game, and you're like, well, this is it.
All right, well, we'll get to a couple texts, and then we'll talk about what's next for Oregon when we return. But first, Buck with SportsCenter. You know, the thing about that loss for Oregon, and I was thinking about this with Texas, too, as they were getting ready to gack it away against Arizona State, mm-hmm, is like, and Texas may be a little different story because they're Texas.
Yeah.
But, you know, you wonder how many of these teams you can build, right? It's like, you feel like Oregon has everything it takes to win a championship. They've shown that because they've gone undefeated, passed every test to this point, right? Mm-hmm. So you look at this team and you
three
go
playoff teams they beat.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this team and you go, this team can win it. This was not the old Oregon where it'd be like, man, you know, when they meet the real big boys up front, it's going to be trouble, right? Mm-hmm. So you start to think, well, if they don't win it with Dylan, and Dylan Gabriel's pretty special.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't often have back-to-back quarterbacks like Bo Nix and Dylan Gabriel, no. right? Like, who's going to be their quarterback next year? Have they even...
Well, I mean...
Have they gotten anybody in the transfer portal?
No one in the portal yet. So we're assuming Dante Moore, but...
I mean, yeah, see, you ain't winning a title with Dante Moore yet. I mean, maybe down the road, but you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. like this team was special.
It felt like you had the opportunity.
And I felt like this with Texas. It's like, you know, I'm looking at Sark going, dude, first of all, I don't know if he ever wins one just because he's Sark. Mm-hmm. But he's got Quinn Ewers, and I know Quinn Ewers has been shaky, but Quinn Ewers is a hell of a talented player. And by the way, he pulled it out of the fire for his team with two huge plays in a row to turn that game on a dime.
It looked like
they were dead.
It looked like they were done. Fourth and Ewers, 13.
And he made those plays. So when you have Ewers and you have all the NFL talent that Texas does, you just wonder, like, does Sark have to win it right here? And I go back to Oregon, and I think, man, I don't know how much better you can build a team, especially at Oregon, you know? So it's frustrating in that way. It's like, we know Lanning's good. We know they've got something that they've never had before even. They've taken this to an even another level. Mm-hmm. But yet, they didn't get over the hump. As a matter of fact, got their ass kicked. So it's like, well, now what?
Yeah. Well, I said this at the beginning. I tried to put a more of a positive spin on this because I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's a wasted season. And I disagree with that. I think Landon's been here 3 years, and I think you've built on something all 3 years.
But does that keep going north is what I'm saying? It's like it's...
I think greener days and better days, greener pastures, better days, whatever you want to call it, are ahead. I think Lanning is building something very sustainable here. Obviously, the recruiting classes, they have a great NIL budget. It's still a very cool, sexy school. I think they're going to continue to be a good program. Will they win a national title? That's the one. I get that that's the last thing you need in order to kind of legitimize your program. But I go back and look at how many teams win national championships. It's really hard. Jim Harbaugh, how many years was Jim Harbaugh at Michigan before he won a national title?
I know it's hard, but that's the goal.
That is the goal.
And that's where and that's what's frustrating is that they were at that level this year.
I thought this was the team most capable of winning a national championship. And maybe if you didn't have to play Ohio State, maybe you would win one. But to your point, let's say next year they take a step back and then there's going to be the sky is crumbling. We want to believe that there's like this steady arc, like when you're mountain climbing, and it's not. I think there's a lot of peaks and valleys. And next year is going to be a very interesting year because Oregon has dominated in the transfer portal. In fact, when you look at the last couple of years with Lanning, the majority of their big-time players have all been transfer portal kids. And we do know that, you know, in a small little sample, the core of your team does need to come from homegrown, and then you supplement it with the portal. And Lanning has done a phenomenal job of hitting home runs in the transfer portal. And next year, they lose a lot. And I know they've done a nice job in the portal, but these next year or two need to be where the homegrown kids with these top 10 recruiting classes really start to blossom. Because I would make the argument that the next year for Oregon is going to be a big, what do we do? Because think about this. Holden gone, Stewart gone, Tez Johnson gone, four of your five starting offensive linemen, including your best two, gone.
Ferguson gone at tight end.
Ferguson gone. Your Heisman Trophy finalist quarterback gone. Whittington gone. Birch gone. Caldwell gone. Harmon gone.
Maybe James gone if he thinks it's his best shot at the NFL.
Possible. Bossa gone. Your entire secondary gone.
Well, all of that is my point.
Yes. It's
in that you, in today's college football, and Oregon's set up nicely because they have the NIL. They can compete. They're amongst, what are they, top three in NIL?
Yes.
So they're going to be right there. It's just, it seems like in college football nowadays, you just have, it's a year-to-year build, right? It's like, okay, well, that one didn't win it. Let's go see if we can build one for next year. I get what you're saying about the recruiting classes, but ultimately, it does come down to a few key players.
Yes.
Whether you home grow those or you get those in the portal, those are the guys. Yeah. And Oregon didn't have enough of those this year. And you just mentioned all the ones we thought were there. Freaking 85% of them are gone.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of scary. And we know the coach is good. We know they're set up with NIL. They're not going away. I'm not saying they're not going to be good. I just wonder if we look back in 5-10 years and go, boy, that team, that one team that went undefeated, was maybe their best chance, and they didn't get over the hump.
I will say that I think next year they may take a little bit of a step backwards, but they should still make the playoff. I mean, the way Oregon recruits, the budget, and now being one of the 12 teams, the expectation for Oregon should be every year to make the playoff.
And then who knows? Maybe you got a good path.
Yeah, and maybe you do have a good path. I just think next year, you know, there may be some growing pains. But much like Ohio State lost two games this year, didn't win the conference, and they got in, and look what happened, right? You don't always have to be the number one team in the country. In fact, not a single one of the top four seeds is left standing. So as we go through next year, and there is some growing pains, and I would assume there would be. If Dante Moore is your quarterback, there's going to be some growing pains. A new offensive line, new weapons, a whole new defense. There's going to be some stumbles along the road. And if you lose a game or two, it doesn't mean that you can't ultimately get where you want to get. But just like anything else, landing is going to have some years, like every other program, where you kind of think this was a better opportunity. And I think you're right that
all the pieces were in place. I mean, how do you get
this was a real opportunity?
I'm trying to think of like what was missing. I guess maybe, I mean, but on paper, their defense, I mean, I know their defense wasn't, you know, obviously cost them, but on paper, it's damn good. We've seen it play great.
I would say the if you had to say what was missing, you probably didn't have the one player on offense, one player on defense that really tilted the field. And when you look at Ohio State, Jeremiah Smith and then Caleb Downs, in this game, going to that 4-2 with the three safety look, Caleb Downs ruined Oregon's passing game. Yeah. And he's arguably the best safety in football, the transfer from Alabama. And then Jeremiah Smith was a gravitational force that no one could do anything with.
So Kobe Savage wasn't it.
He was not
it. And that was a transfer guy.
He was transfer guy.
And everybody loved that move, getting him in there.
And like Muhammad's a good corner, but he's not a dominant guy. And then as good as Tez Johnson, and we didn't get to see Evan Stewart, they just weren't Jeremiah Smith.
Smith they just recruited, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, he's a freshman.
He's a freshman. In Miami, he was close going to Miami, and Ohio State got him at the end.
Gee, I wonder how they got him.
I wonder.
But the Ducks do think and hope that they've got this next Jeremiah Smith and DeCorian Moore, who's the number one player in the country coming in.
And so if you ask what this team lacked, I would say it was that. You lacked a absolute game wrecker because you look on the defensive side of the ball, you know, Birch was really good, and Harmon was really good, and Uyunglele was really good. They weren't game changers. And if you look at most national championship teams, Alabama, Clemson, and Dylan Gabriel's really good too, but I don't think Dylan Gabriel was as good as Bo Nix. Dylan Gabriel's a great college quarterback, but he wasn't Deshaun Watson, right? He wasn't one of those, like, truly, like, he wasn't Vince Young, he wasn't Cam Newton. And I would say that's the one thing, is you need to get the gravitational pull player on offense or defense. Remember when they played Auburn, and they really neutralized Cam Newton, but they didn't neutralize, Nick Farley?
Fairley.
He was a guy that was just like, well, there's nothing we can do, or Ezekiel Elliott. And they need that one piece. And when you recruit at the level that they're getting right now with five-star kids, that's where those kids come from. And hopefully this group coming up develops one or two of those guys. As you mentioned, the young receiver that they think could be that.
Yeah, DeCorian Moore, who just won the MVP of the All-American game.
Yeah.
Hey, I have faith in him. I do. I think they've got...
I think brighter days are ahead.
I think the program's cooking. I just feel like that was a real opportunity.
A great chance with a great roster. I mean,
it was all teed up.
Yep. Yeah. And I do think next year... It's so early. I think next year, regular season, I think there's going to be some dips where people are going to be pissy and moany. I just think that is, it's a lot to ask to lose the production and starts that they are going to lose. And again, look at those names that I just read off on offense and defense, including, if it really is Dante Merritt, you're turning to a quarterback with almost no experience. And when we did see him at UCLA, let's be honest, it wasn't game-changing. So unless they go out and find another Dylan Gabriel, Bo Nix in the portal, you're going to get some growing pains at quarterback with an all new O-line, all new receivers, and like with Sadiq, the tight end, who showed flashes, but he's never done it in any sort of consistency. There may be some growing pains next year, but maybe that group with the young guys, maybe it grows into something that isn't 13-0 and isn't number one team in the country good, but by the end of the year, maybe they have a better high end than this team here. But this will be viewed as a missed opportunity.
That was rough.
It was rough.
College football, Cloverleaf coming up next on The Fan. Push it to the limit. All right, we'll get more into Oregon when we post-mortem with Joey Harrington tomorrow. Wonder what he's going to say.
I don't know. Be interested, because he usually has a pretty rational take on all this. Be interested to see what he thinks.
What if he's sky is falling guy
tomorrow? It's over. It's over. Something tells me that won't be the case.
Joey comes on and says, fire landing.
Well, and there's people like,
Tosh LePoy's getting a lot of heat today.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a...
When you give up 41, your DC is going to get some heat.
Yes. And basically, when you've given up 30 against the only offenses that are worth a damn that you've played, it's a fair question.
People pointing out, too, that when Oregon has rematches, those opponents frequently score even more points than they did the first time.
Is that right?
With them against Washington as well.
I'd also like to point out that this year, Ohio State fans were calling for the firing of both of their coordinators
at some point.
And
they'll probably build them statues if they finish this thing off.
Yeah, so... You know, it's easy to. No one was complaining about Oregon's coordinators until
exactly.
that game. No one was complaining the first time they played Ohio State.
Well, we also have this narrative out there, and you know, look, I know that you hate this, but I've got to say it again. I think the layoff for the bye teams did matter.
All four of them are gone.
And all four of them fell down by double digits.
Yeah.
In the first half.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think, especially as like looking at the Oregon game, just kind of the way they just weren't fast. Off the ball, like just everything, it just looked bogged down early. All four of them looked like that. But I think there's this thing with Lanning now, because the Idaho game, they were not good. Mm. The Georgia game, the first year, they were not good.
Yeah.
It's this idea that long layoffs, long times to prepare in the Lanning era, the team has not been good.
No. I mean, it's...
In any of those games, I'm trying to think of a game... Where they had a long layoff and were.
I mean, that would have been the only long layoffs that they've had is the first game of the year and then this. I mean, the bowl games, which does it really matter? I mean, when you beat Liberty or whatever after the
long layoff. Well, they smoke Liberty. Yeah, and didn't they beat North Carolina?
Yeah, they beat North Carolina. So they've won the two bowl games. But again, people are going to point out those bowl games don't matter. And, you know, I just... So, this idea that the layoff is like this death sentence. Well, guess what? You're still going to try to get a layoff because you're still going to try to win the conference. You're still going to try to be the best team you can. No one's going to get to the end of the year and be like, hey guys, let's take a couple losses.
No, of course not. It's just how you handle the layoff, sure. I think is the interesting thing. And of course, Lanning will never, ever probably talk about this publicly.
Yeah.
But if they get a bye next year,
they'll handle it differently.
He's going to change things up.
He probably already has a new plan for that.
Exactly. And that's what I'm talking
maybe
about.
Maybe you need to do more live bullets. Maybe you need to say, hey, even if we sacrifice some injuries, we got to go live. We actually have to tackle.
I think that's right. I think I'm guessing it's got to be more intense.
Sure.
And it's got to be more intense leading up to the game, the week of the game.
Because we can sit here and say that obviously the layoff hurt and that the teams that went through got a nice pull. Right, so you got to play like for Penn State, right? They got Boise State, which you know ended up being a good game, but they pulled away. Or SMU, right? Whatever, because that would have been their first game. It wasn't Boise State; it was SMU. But what happens? What happens next year when you have that and you're the 5 seed or you're the 6 seed, and instead of getting SMU, you get Ohio State or you get Alabama? This year, the draw ended up being where it ended up being favorable for those teams. But the idea after 1 year that it's always going to be beneficial to you to play an extra game, yeah, not unless that extra team happens to be like an absolute juggernaut like Ohio State that's staring you in the face. Like, it's just... I just don't like that we're taking 1 year of results and we're trying to make sweeping statements about what the college football playoff is going to be down the road. And that's just silly because one, they're obviously probably going to tweak it. And two, there's just no way of predicting the draw. I mean, right now it appears that the best team in college football that right now that looks unstoppable lost two games, including one to a team that has no offense whatsoever and was sitting there that could have been anywhere from the 5 to the 7 seed. I mean,
didn't even make their conference championship.
Yes.
All that's true. It's just that I think that it's just a weird format when you have a team that sits and doesn't play for 24 days.
It is a long time.
That is so long.
But, you know, we used to do this with national title games when it was the one, when you just had the two teams.
Yeah, you'd have to wait 30 days.
You had to wait 30 days.
But I mean, all of that, that's dumb, too. So they've switched that. So
but
I think,
at least both teams were waiting the same period of time with
exactly.
those.
It's just the idea that this tournament, and again, you're right, they're gonna fix all this. They're going to get it right, hopefully, soon. But this whole thing could have been, can be wrapped up by yesterday. The whole tournament.
Yeah.
And we still have 2 weeks to go. The 20th is the last game.
20th is the last game.
We still have 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Sure. That's absurd.
Yeah.
It just, the NFL, it's like, yes, you get a bye and other teams have to play, but it's week, done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's it.
It would be
college
nice.
The same way. And I know that there's finals. And I know that there's
the finals.
The transfer portal. I get all that, but come on, man. Telling me you can't just get this thing going earlier?
I just would like to point out that anyone bitching and moaning about this, it makes you sound like a whiny bitch because every team has to deal with this. They've always had to deal with it in the world of college football. Dan Lanning in Oregon has never made this excuse, so please stop. If you're an Oregon fan.
Well, I don't think anybody's bitching about it.
Oregon fan is.
Well, but it's not an excuse. It's just a thing. Both things can be true.
And a fan of any, and there's going to be a certain type of fan for any team that if this happened always. To was going to have that.
And I don't know why we're always trying to address that. Let fans be fans. I'm just saying both things can be true. It's not an excuse, but it is a thing. It is a factor, and teams got to be better prepared for it. And then the conference championships are another thing.
Yeah.
It's like that's another thing that college football, it's like, What are we even doing with these games?
Yeah.
But then how do you determine a conference champion if you've got 15 teams in a league or 18 teams in a league and they don't play each other?
Yep.
So there's a lot of S they need to figure out.
And it's the first year of it and tweaks will be made and you know it's just the end of the day right now we are looking at no conference champions, none of the top 4 seeds are sitting here, but that easily could have been different cuz Arizona State certainly could have moved on and then you know what are we saying about that? It's just I just don't like taking 1 year of results because that 1 year of something happening doesn't mean that it happens every year. And
did you like Billie Jean King getting all fiery in the coin toss?
Yeah, she was a little hot and spicy. She was hot.
Yeah.
Well, they introduce her and you're like, oh, that's Billie Jean King. It's cool.
She's
and then all of a sudden she's fist pumping, going, "Let's go!"
Why was she was in the Rose Parade too? What was her?
She's the Grand Marshal.
Yeah. Okay. And that's a hell of a Grand Marshal.
I wasn't certain exactly why that she was there and was all fired up, but all right.
One of the ones that I went to before, Paula Deen was doing the coin
Please
toss.
Forgive me.
Yeah.
Paula Deen.
She can't do that anymore. What is Paula Deen?
Is she dead?
I think she's just been canceled.
Why?
Oh,
that was the racist thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Paula Deen was a juggernaut for a while, and she's just gone.
Well, she's probably working on her resurgent documentary.
Well, she doesn't need it. She's probably worth a couple hundred million dollars, and she's old. And
well,
fat and sassy.
Martha Stewart had it.
Yeah, she got
you something else.
Have you seen her documentary that came out?
I have not seen that
called
yet.
Called Martha.
It pops up on Netflix all the
time. Well, I tell you what, it's a good watch. Yeah. She is a
grade A bitch,
prime bitch. Yeah.
That's what that drop was in reference to. Was her?
I mean, she is.
Yeah.
She has no feelings.
No.
She's a grade A bitch.
I thought Ellen's like that too. I think Ellen's like moving to England or something.
Why?
She was America's sweetheart.
Yeah,
for a while.
People hate her here because apparently she's one of those that like.
Yeah, I guess she's
severely mistreated her staff or something like that.
Who else? Rosie O'Donnell turned out to be a big old bitch that everyone hated.
Yeah, but she always was. Like,
no,
she was
Rosie,
outwardly.
Rosie
a bitch.
Was America's sweetheart for a long time.
Dude, she was mean to everyone. That was her whole bit.
Dude, that
she
Rosie
is
show.
A loose
she
bitch.
Was like the new Oprah.
I just always thought she was kind of biting.
That whiny bitch.
She was just kind of a. That was her bit, was being a bitch.
Well, she's gone too now.
Because this bitch is behind maintenance.
I think Martha's the one that survived it the best.
Resourceful little bitch.
Martha's out there with Snoop Dogg still mixing it up.
Well, if you watch the documentary, you will see why.
Yeah. Well,
like, it's been a really. Yeah. It started with social media. It actually started with the roast. They had her on, I think it might have been the Bieber roast.
I remember she did some of that. And we
they
were like,
put
why
her
is
on
Martha
there.
Stewart there.
Well, that's exactly what she said. She was like, her team had to convince her to go do it. But they said that showed that she actually had a personality and a sense of humor. And then all of a sudden, she took to social media and got a whole new audience.
Well, and it's worked. She's doing like Bic ads and she's selling all kinds of stuff. It's good to be Martha now.
What a power bitch.
She is a power bitch.
God, I do not mess with her.
No, she's a convicted felon. She's got some street cred.
Grade A prime bitch. All right, a significant scientific discovery in England. New home of Ellen, apparently. Next on The Fan.